This is Icon Art Radio. Alan Cobb, Donna Colby, Bill Teeple, here we are. We began, well, maybe we began to discuss the dynamics of creating one of these shows and sort of exactly what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And what is going on here?
Well, no one knows. I think one of the things that had struck me just in the last few minutes before we began the show is the, you know, the dynamics of how we actually do the show. And when we first started this, of course, we wanted it to be informal and conversational. So we tended to talk like we do in a normal conversation, which means all three of us are constantly interrupting each other. And that doesn't make a good show. So we very quickly disciplined ourselves not to interrupt and to always wait for a stopping point. And then that required another discipline, which is don't talk too long without coming to a stopping point because they're not going to interrupt you. And so here I am pausing so you can pick up the thread.
Right, and I'm supposed to have something to say now.
Well, I'll pick it up again. And that's a third discipline, which is if everyone suddenly stops talking, you can't allow dead air on the radio. So somebody's got to pick it up and say something. Doesn't even matter what too much, so long as it's not just silence, because people will think they're not tuned into the station and it'll all, you know, disappear very quickly. So it's just, you know, and there's like four disciplines now that we're actually doing while we're doing the show. Another is we try not to sneeze and cough and hiccup and make other strange sounds during the recording. If someone says something you think is supremely stupid, you can't just quietly to yourself go, jeez, you know, because the mic will get that, and then Alan will have to edit it out afterwards in post. But also another aspect of it is that as we began doing all of these five or six skills now, we also, I think, developed an interesting way of allowing each person to go wherever they needed to go with the topic. And we don't feel some kind of responsibility to stick to the topic. In a sense, we often start with a topic because you need a starting point, but we don't feel any obligation to stay on that. If it turns into something more interesting, we're more than happy to go there.
So why are we doing this in the first place?
The show?
Why? I mean, what is it that's happening? Why? To me, this is a great, I really love doing this show, and it's been very rewarding to work with you two people, because I think that the combination of intelligences and angles on things makes a nice combination of mm-hmm. bouncing off ideas. Mm-hmm. And so I would be doing this anyway. We already did this before there was ever any radio show.
Yeah.
And it's a rewarding activity. The radio show has given us an opportunity and an excuse to force ourselves to sit down and talk together like this.
Oh yeah, because it's like the art, it's the old art connection basically.
It's the art connection having reached, well, between Odd Thursday mm-hmm. and the radio show, we've accomplished really everything I wanted to do with what used to be the old art connection.
Yeah.
I would try to make all this happen in the art connection, but it never quite happened.
And the art connection nights often were just the three of us having this kind of conversation.
That's right. Quite
but
often.
Sort of nature kind of managed to organize it into a format that accomplished the most that we were trying to get out of that. Mm.
It's interesting that...
And we've drawn, because it's on the radio, we've just drawn the whole, more of the community into the conversation.
And being on the radio also, as we were talking a couple of shows back, it provides that extra motivation to actually do it. Because if it's, well, we could have another chat, you know, when should the three of us get together and talk about art? It could be months before we actually get around to doing it. But this relentless demand for shows, you know, every week, it means that we actually do it.
And we actually have to come up with a point to discuss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unlike
or
this
someone
show.
To this is the, we can call, if you want a name for it, this is the pointless show.
Oh, well, this is the self-referral show. This That's is right. the show about the show.
Well, and what I find interesting, too, in terms of our extension of this extended effect of our the three of us having a conversation, is that occasionally I will hear from people who were listening to our show in the car on the way over to the cafe, and what we were talking about in our show then carried over into their conversation at the table in the cafe. So hopefully that happens a lot. That's what we would like to think,
that
we would generate conversations beyond our show about these things.
And that is what we're doing here. I mean, I asked, what are we doing here? Well, I knew we were going to get this answer, that we're creating this dialogue. And what I desired was to create a dialogue in this community around points of art and what art's all about and what's happened with art in the 21st century in the context of being here. And that seems to be what's happening. So
it's exciting also to think that what might have been the art connection, you know, three of us sitting, you know, in a half dark art gallery talking to ourselves, is something now that really is making some contact possible on a global basis. You know, there's over 130 countries making connections to KRUULP.com and streaming some of our shows or downloading some of our shows or going to our website, which is icon-art.org. and streaming shows from there. So what we're saying is not just going out into our community, it's really going out. It's part of the, you know, the internet phenomenon.
And I want to point out that we're not like pompous snobs, in case we were confused about
it. Hopefully not.
I'm hoping that we're not I know I'm not a pompous snob, because what I'm about to say is I've always viewed my position in the culture around me as everyday guy, as a guy like everybody else. And it's bringing that perspective onto the consideration of art that I think has been an important factor that I've brought to what I do with the arts. It doesn't mean that I haven't, you know, studied and am educated and know these things, but I always have, in any consideration, have thought of myself as just like everybody else. I'm just anybody looking at these things. And I'm anybody having gotten an education. I'm anybody having tried to make art. I'm anybody having tried to curate shows. So it's like we as just everybody anybody are discussing these points, not as though we know anything
anymore than anybody else,
but that we're raising the issues that are in front of our faces as interested people.
Right. No one is here suggesting that you should listen to what I say or what Donna says because one of us has a PhD in something, or one of us did a larger painting than anyone else in town, or something that would make our opinion supposedly more important. I think we're exploring the ideas, and you know, we're pretty divergent in where we come from, and yet we share some, you know, very, very basic values, and that gives us the common ground to talk on. But we have very different tastes and very different preferences, and you know, very different backgrounds.
And yet all three of us have the similar feature of loving the exploration of ideas
yes.
and points of
yes.
view. And that's, to me, that's the whole purpose of the show, is
yeah.
to introduce a topic, any topic, and take it, you know, explore all of its pathways for a half an hour, and hopefully spark a new line of thinking in our listeners so that they can, and I know that does happen because people come up to me on the street and will mention like some certain point from a show, and that then they began to think this and this and this with reference to their own life and their own interest and all of that. And good radio, especially when you're driving in your car and you're listening to talk radio of any sort, I think that's the exciting thing about it. You know, you can take a long trip all the way across the country and be highly stimulated by the ideas that you hear
yeah.
on talk radio yeah. And get an education in the process of driving across the country.
So what we offer is art ideas to the people as they're driving across the country. And
yeah.
I think in Fairfield, not everyone just spontaneously starts talking about art ideas at the cafe. artists do,
yeah.
perhaps.
Yeah, some. Those
but
are not
in
talking
general,
about
them. I want to like go, you know, be a little goad, a little poke it a little bit,
yeah.
get certain conversations going.
Well, I do like to emit little challenges into the environment upon occasion. I think it's a good thing to do. I think it produces, you know, good effects in the environment and good effects on me. Because if I do it irresponsibly, then I get tons of negativity back on myself, and I learn something from that. And if I do it the right way, then people sometimes notice things they might not have noticed. I was just imagining when Donna was talking about the fact that we all three like to talk about ideas, I immediately imagined a radio show of three people who don't like to talk about ideas. And I suppose someone, Bill would open the show and he'd say, I think that Mark Rothko is the greatest painter who ever lived. And Donna would say, well, I don't think he's as great as Picasso. And I would say, yeah, I'm inclined to agree. And then we would just sit here for about 25 minutes and not say anything.
Or else the other person would then say, I like Popeye cartoons.
Yes, that's true.
Someone
we could
else
take
could
turns
say,
doing that.
I really like spinach.
Yeah.
It could go on. That could actually be kind of a fun show.
What?
Well,
do my ears deceive me?
I like to break your boundaries, Alan.
Thank you.
But, well, I was thinking also about our dear radio station, KRUU, and how they have chosen not to have a certain genre
yeah.
in their station, you know, so that you can, if you keep your radio tuned to KRUU and you turn it on at different times of day, you don't know what you're going to
that's
be
right.
listening to. It could
that's
be
right.
politics, it could
it's
be art,
challenge.
It could
yeah.
be some any form of music. And I think that's a wonderful thing because it opens people's awareness to something that they may not have even thought they were interested in. That's happened to me a number of times
yeah.
when turning on
oh,
the radio.
Yeah.
And it's something that I almost changed it because I think, oh, that's not my thing. But it catches me. And then I find myself getting interested in something completely new.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like going into a gallery. You turn on the radio, and with KRUU, you are going to get a program that someone thinks is well worth listening to.
Mm-hmm.
And if it strikes you as odd or irrelevant or confusing or something, then you have to think twice about it and wonder, well, wait a minute. Somebody thought it was worth going to the trouble of producing this thing and putting it on the radio. So what are they trying to do? What am I missing? And I think that's true. The whole radio station is kind of almost a da-da presentation in its own right.
But it's a cross-section of our Fairfield
yeah,
culture,
yeah.
which is a reflective of international, global culture.
Sure.
And there's a lot of things out there that I don't even think about or have ever known existed. And then you If you have a full spectrum kind of offering, like KRUU is, then you get surprised to realize, well, that's happening in this community, or I've never listened to music like that before. Yeah. And it expands your boundaries.
When I was a little girl, and actually all the way up through into my 20s, I would have the habit of going to the library and walking through the shelves with my eyes closed, running my hands along the books, and then just pull out a book at random. And I even had a little rule at one time that I could take 7 books out of the library at a time, and you know, one I could choose was a fiction book, one I could choose was a nonfiction book, but then 3 of them I had to do this random thing, just like close my eyes and pull them off and read that book. Because like you were saying, Alan, somebody took the time to write all of these books in the library and were interested enough, and somebody felt it worthy to be published. And occasionally I really got a bust, you know, and just got a book that was so tedious and boring I couldn't make it through. But more often than not, it would be something in a category that, again, I just had no idea I could possibly even muster up an interest in, but I found it to be fascinating and learned a tremendous amount of things that I never would have learned otherwise. And that was a great portion of my education in childhood, was this random selection.
Well,
of
I had a similar kind of experience, because there was a maiden aunt who lived in our family, my father's sister, and she was the head librarian at the Brooklyn branch of the New York Public Library. And she brought home an armload of books every Friday for me. Mm. We didn't have a TV, and so I'd get typically 6 or 8 books that had arrived at the acquisitions desk. She didn't go to the children's section, she went to the acquisitions desk, and she knew me. So it was sort of random, but it was filtered by an adult who was many decades older than I was and was very well read and very well educated and erudite. And she would just pick these things because she thought I would find them interesting. And I think her main criterion was that I would find them interesting. Hmm. And then, of course, I'm sure as an adult, she had some ulterior motives about things that would help me learn important lessons and stuff. But I, as a result, I was reading, you know, an amazing assortment of unexpected discoveries on a practically daily basis, thanks to Ada's wisdom and her stamina, because we didn't live anywhere near Brooklyn. We lived in the middle of Manhattan, and she took, I don't know how many subways to get to the library every day to work. And she carried these books home in her arms, you know, for probably a good hour of commuting and walking and bouncing around on public transportation in New York.
So, Bill, what was your relationship to libraries?
Oh, I got to make
or
my point.
Random input.
The point that's in my mind before I forget it is that there's the lesson here seems to be the lesson of openness. Mm-hmm. That if you're open, and these things get delivered to your doorstep,
check them out.
Places to see and things to learn, go there and explore it and expand yourself. Because I know so well from being in the art making business and the art presenting business, that so many people walk in the front door with a closed mind, they know what they like, and they walk around the room and they walk out and make a judgment. And the gift that this artist that maybe spent 40 years developing a way of talking about his love and his vision is missed. So this is an interesting topic that has come up. Now you asked, what is my relationship to libraries?
Yeah, we just talked about our relationship to
libraries. The randomness is more the way things randomly came to me to investigate in my life were sort of just delivered to me in my passage through life. Mm. I don't have the library.
You weren't a bookworm.
No, I wasn't a bookworm. Mm. I was a more of an action-oriented person. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't the fastest reader. I think it's an art thing. There's certain, I don't know what it is. I'm very visual, totally visual. I mean, if I would be shown pictures, I probably would have, I related more to the visual and to the pictures and to metaphor and all of that than reading. But I was also a very active person. I was actually into sports and those active areas and making visual things and making stuff. I did get into very much enjoying reading at one point in my life, but it was, I didn't hang out in the library a lot.
No. My image of a library as a child was that it was this magical place with many, many doorways, mm-hmm. and that every book was a doorway into some world that was complete. I mean, because I loved exploring in my neighborhood too, and in the woods and all of that kind of thing, but the kind of exploration in the library opened me up to worlds that I had no access to in my ordinary life. Mm-hmm. And so that was the draw to books. I think probably in looking back upon it now, after having traveled and all of that, I probably would have preferred to actually go to those places and see it. Because I also was a very visual person. I would have rather gone to Africa or the moon or whatever, you know, instead of reading about it. But because I couldn't go to those places, the books were the next best thing mm-hmm. to open up my imagination to those places.
Well, I always liked history. Mm. I like to have times, historic times, be opened up for me, and books did it, especially more like, not like a textbook, but like mm-hmm. novels and things. My strongest memory, you're sitting in an aisle in the library in a pile of art books, looking at pictures. Because my memories are more like looking at pictures, looking mm-hmm. at art books in the library. As much of my education, I did a lot of self-educating in the library, and I would love to read about the lives of artists. I've been pretty strongly interested in the arts for some time now.
Yeah, I guess I would have to say my first interest was in the arts, and I only got into the, you know, technology and science side of things when I began to discover how much creativity there was embedded in those areas. You know, to me technology is a concentration of manifest creative intelligence, and that's why I like it. I get very tired of fiddling with computers and things like that. I used to know how to build them from scratch, but they don't interest me that way now, because they've evolved beyond the point where an individual can do much with them, unless you're, you know, building a little unique thing of your own. But to me, they're all just tools. And it's interesting about the visual. Being a visual person, because even at my most conceptual mode, you know, talking about something that's pure philosophy and has no connection to anything tangible, I still relate to the concepts inside in a very visual way.
Well, that's exactly the way my mind works.
Yeah, I mean, I almost wonder whether there's any other possibility. I can't quite imagine how you would understand things other than in a kind of visual way. But it goes beyond vision. It's just that vision seems to be the sense that it goes beyond, as opposed to some other sense.
It's a combination for me of visual, symbolic, metaphoric.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of starts verbally sometimes, but it goes away from verbal, you know, constructs very quickly, especially if you're getting anywhere. If you hold it in the verbal domain, then it just gets bogged down in definitions and things. And most of what I've learned in the last 10 years or more has been essentially based on the fact that there aren't any definitions that work, and what I need to know next doesn't need to be learned on the basis of defining things or terminology.
So because you're a sound artist, how does that relate to all of this? Whether the knowledge that you're, you know, taking in or integrating knowledge in a visual way, how does that relate to then your work?
Well, the
sound.
I love that question because it's what's most fascinating about the sound for me. I see all the sound. To me, the sound works as a visual thing. I don't see it as color the way some people do with synesthesia, but I do see it as a visual spatial thing. Mm. And in a way, you can deal with music and sound without activating any of the verbal centers of the brain. And so I can work in this field of sound design and sound sculpture, whatever you want to call it, for hours without doing anything verbal at all. And I obviously have a tendency to get verbal. So it's a tremendous relief for me. It's sort of like playing in paint instead of in poetry, because paint is nonverbal also. But for me, the sound thing is a richer world than the visual one. Partly maybe because of its mystery. I mean, it's kind of a different direction. People don't think much about sound, and I didn't even know I had been thinking about sound all my life until 10 years ago, when I suddenly realized I was still doing certain things I had been doing since I was 5 years old. But I think part of it is that it isn't verbal. It's an escape from conceptualizing, from naming, from categorizing, pigeonholing, relating, defining, explaining, all of that. And partly because since it's sort of like calling it visual is an allusion to the fact that it goes beyond any ordinary sense. It's a complete experience inside, and it's not dependent upon any particular sense. It starts with hearing in the case of sound, or it starts with vision in the case of painting. But the inner reality that you end up playing in is complete and not bound by any the boundaries of any one sense.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.